This is
Make It Kind.
M.I.P.
with Masamela Mafumo.
Mark Thompson.
Make It Kind.
Get woke.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a year of anniversaries when it comes to our movement. This is the year that marks the 60th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act, but it's also the 70th anniversary of Brown v. Board, which many consider the case that got it all started. But what has happened in the past 70 years? Have we progressed? Have we gone backward? And what is the state of education when it comes to Brown v. Board and our people's involvement, our people's encouragement? Very happy to have with us a very special guest. And she and I were just getting acquainted because we have some things in common. She went to Fisk, many by. Was raised literally on the campus of Fisk University. Not only did she go to Fisk, she has a Master of Education degree from Harvard University as well. We want to hear all about it. And she is the executive director, most importantly now, of the Surge Institute. So we want to hear all about Surge and what Surge is doing. Please welcome Andrea Black Evans. Andrea, how are you? Welcome to Make It Plain.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Reverend Mark. I'm so excited to be here today. This is amazing conversation. I'm happy to have the ability to share my perspective, my engagement, my understanding of what's occurred, and also my experiences to what's occurred since Brown v. Board. So I'm grateful for you all having us here, having me here, but also I'm saying us as a representative of my work, of the organization, Surge Institute. Thank you so much for having me here. We want to talk about this topic, but also what I want to share about the work that we're doing. So again, I'm just grateful to be here.
And the two are connected. So I want to start with Surge. You mentioned what's happened since Brown. Just for the record, folks, neither Andre and I or I were around when Brown was decided. I know many of you think I was, but I was not. Let's start with Surge because I want to tie it together. So tell us first of all about what Surge is doing, because there's very important work. And I also think we'll tie into some of our Nashville connection, but talk to us about Surge.
Yeah, so the Surge Institute is the dream of our founder, Carmita Simon. She was doing the work, entered into a space. She's our CEO and our founder. And she was doing the work of education, working for major nonprofits, working for major districts, and realized, wait a minute, the folks making the decisions at the table for Black and Brown children do not represent the communities in which they serve. How do we now create a pipeline, but not only create the pipeline, but how do we support those individuals who we want to be represented at these tables? And then take it a step further, supporting them, but also encouraging them to shift those tables, to shake those tables, to disrupt those tables, and feel confident and powerful to do. So the Surge Institute does that in multiple ways. There are various programmings that we have, program offerings that we have. And so I'm the executive director of Surge Academy. It's a six-month fellowship. It's a national fellowship that only supports Black and Brown education leaders in specific cities and provides them this cohort experience that helps build their leadership, executive skills, as well as helps to broaden their networks and builds their confidence to focus on the work, right? And do so with centering their identity as a strength and not a deficit. And so we do that in the academy. There's also a fellowship in Chicago that is a 10-month experience. We have a Black Principals Network programmatic arm as well. And so there's multiple elements within our, and that's just three of the five. We also have Power Surge and Surge Angels. And we hope to expand our program offerings to support Black and Brown leaders in youth survey spaces across the nation. I currently work in DC, Philadelphia, Detroit, Las Vegas, Kansas City, and Indianapolis, right? Those are our Surge cities, and we are looking to expand for the academy. The fellowship is centered in Chicago. That is our flagship site. And we also have a fellowship experience that has now sunsetted that was in Oakland, California.
So now you just said, and we know this to be true, that those who are at the table when it comes to leadership and education don't look like the population of young people that they serve. So let's reconcile that with what we know about Brown versus Board. Brown versus Board was supposed to have taken care of that. Correct?
It was supposed to, right? And so when I think about, and I did, I was so grateful to do some reflection here. And when I think about Brown v. Board, I just think about Reverend Brown, right? He just wanted his girls to be able to go to the neighborhood school. I don't have to drive anywhere. I can just go three blocks away to have access to this space. It started as a space of around resources and access. I want to have access. I do not want to be told that I can't go to my neighborhood school because I am Black. If I do not, if that the neighborhood school is not a school that is predominantly white, I still want to have the adequate, beyond adequate, I want to have the proper and resources as well. So that's what's like the basis of it. But what ended up happening was that it went to start people thinking that the perception is that white schools were better. And having access to that is that white spaces were better than Black spaces as a symptom of that, and made it very, and not the board, not the precedent itself, the folks following this, right, made it about that, right? The opposition made it about that. And so we went from having a community where there were thousands of Black educators that after Brown v. Board, thousands of those folks were displaced.
Yeah.
Thousands of them.
Yeah. And what's unfortunate is, I was sharing with Andrea folks and my grandfather started my family's career at FIST, so to speak, as director of admissions is the early 60s. And but back in that day, it was true, and I'm sure you always will remember this. Being an educator in Black community, be that even someone on the school elementary school teaching level, not to mention being an administrator to be a Black principal or something, was in our community was as prestigious as being a doctor or a lawyer.
Yes.
That was, it was no different. And we didn't have a whole lot of doctors and lawyers, but that was the thing to do. And so to hear now that there aren't as many, and that there aren't as many opportunities, and that there's not as much leadership, and probably not even as encouragement. A lot of people, you're a unicorn these days. You try to talk about going and get a master's in education, not to mention a doctorate in education. Ain't a whole lot of folk doing that anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah. I think about when you said, but like it was our doctors, our lawyers, and teachers all in the same space. And the reason why was because our best and our brightest didn't have other spaces to go. And so they became those teachers. So we had the folks that were displaced were even more highly educated than the teachers that existed in those white communities. I was mentioned to you before we got on, like W.E.B. Du Bois was a teacher.
Yeah.
So a Fisk guy, he taught in a schoolhouse. So this Harvard educated, Fisk educated person was teaching in schoolhouses because number one, in our communities, it was valued, but also that we had to do that because there was no access in these other spaces. And so I don't believe that that Reverend Brown, when he went into that space to say, hey, I want to have access. I know you feel very deeply in my spirit that he didn't go into there saying, I just want to have my daughter go to this school because it's better, because it's a white school. That was never the space. That was never what it was. Or that white teachers are better. That's not it. It's, this was in my community, 3 to 4 blocks away from my home. And I should be able to go there. And so the issue that came after that, to send signals to communities to say that these school spaces were better, has been what we've been plagued with as a community moving forward. So right now we have about 60% of Black and Latinx or Latino students attend schools that are 75% folks of color, and that white folks attend schools that are 75% mostly Black, like mostly white. So the segregation persists. It's maybe not 100% in all the space we were before, but it persists to this day. And we have moving from the communities that had, I realize now I'm an anomaly. I have these conversations growing up on the South Side of Chicago. Most of my teachers are Black. right? So this is because Chicago, notoriously a very segregated city, right? Actively segregated city. Most of my teachers were Black, principals were Black. Most of the educators I knew around me were Black. But I realized that is an anomaly, even to high school, for most communities, most Black folks across the nation. That does not really exist. And so when we think about our work at Surge, we also want to think about, we're encouraging folks to come into this landscape, the leaders that are already there, making it safe for other Black and Brown teachers. I was a principal when I did Surge. So how am I now creating safe spaces for Black and Brown teachers? How am I ensuring that they are centered in wellness, that they are taken care of so that they can continue to share the message of Brown with other teachers so they can enter into the system? And we want to do that for principals. We want to do that for superintendents. We want to do that for CEOs of nonprofits. We want to encourage and empower them to say, hey, now you're in this position of power. We're going to surround you and empower you and support you when you make that decision that is in the best interest of Black and Brown folks.
Yeah. But part of the problem is too, there's such a white lash to Brown. It continues today. We have so many factors, white flight and other things that kept the schools de facto segregated. Part of it too was to build disincentives in the public school system. So teachers aren't paid what they're supposed to be paid. Administrators aren't paid. What do we do about that? It's the way we're going to retaliate to Brown is we're going to make public education as unattractive and as unrewarding to Black and any other professionals as possible. Am I right about that?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right about that. And that was directly related to that white flight space.
Yeah.
If we are, even I take it to the next with the busing. I'm going to take, you're sending this message of, oh yeah, we're going to open our doors and we're going to make the space diverse and we're going to bring the Black and Brown folks into the white schools because they are better. That sends that direct signal that the white schools are better. And so for us, because we are working alongside and with and in support of Black and Brown leaders nationally, it's really and truly about how do we continue to, and I'm going to say, you're going to hear me say this over, we got to empower them to shake that table, because we all know it, that when folks get into these seats sometimes, they just replicate the systems that they've seen that continue to cause harm to Black and Brown folks. And if we can't acknowledge that we've been a part of that, that we've contributed to that. Like, I was an educator. I've been an educator for almost 20 years now, and I was in school in Chicago Public Schools for 10 years. If I have to acknowledge at some point of my career that I've created harm by replicating a system that was not meant to be beneficial for Black and Brown children. And then once I reconcile with that and realize that I've done that, how can I now change it while I'm in the role and beyond the role?
You're saying that you too.
Yeah.
If I heard you correctly, were a part of creating harm by replicating the system.
Absolutely. So I'll give an example. Replicating, but then also rectify. So we took part and we realized that suspension numbers were directly affecting Black boys. So suspending kids and suspend. So I remember starting my career and, okay, this is the protocol that we have. And so I'm just going to, if they did this, you suspend them. But you realize that you have the authority and the autonomy to create the environment that you want for the children. And when you're empowered in that way, and when you know that you can do these things, then you start to shift that narrative of, like, I don't have to do that. Like, they don't have to be suspended. What else could I do within my school building that keeps them from being suspended? So then I moved into a restorative practice community, and we moved from almost to zero suspensions within a year because we were doing restorative practicing and getting folks connected in that way. There's one specific event that I would like to bring up, and I don't like to. My first year being a principal, a young student, he brought a gun to school. And this is why we need folks who have cultural understanding of communities. And I led a K-8 school. So he brought a gun to school. And then we got the gun, we got everything, we took care of that. And then the police came to me and asked me if I wanted to press charges. This is a seventh grade student. And I said, press charges? No. I didn't realize that I had the authority to press charges or not. And how many other principals who had that authority over students would have pressed charges? And I did not. And that student then went to restorative spaces. Then we end up having healing circles with that student. That student never had another issue moving forward. So that's what I'm saying. You can, there's some of us that are in systems that we're like, oh, we got this role. We want to keep it. Because as Black and Brown people, we are living in a state of consistent space that we were just trying to survive.
Yeah.
But sometimes we have to be surrounded by people, connected with people, reminded that we can thrive, not only thrive, we can dream of a better outcomes for our kids. And so that's what Surge loves to do within our work, is inspire. One of the elements and components of our experience is that every one of our fellows is asked to create a freedom dream. What is your wildest dream for change that exists within your education community? What would you do to shift the outcomes for the Black and Brown youth that you serve in whatever role that you are in, or even beyond your role? And so in that moment, I didn't realize that I was dreaming. I was doing something. I was saying, I don't want another Black man, young Black man in the system for this level of a mistake. What can we do to heal this?
Right.
I felt empowered to do so because of my network and my community and my understanding and sitting in my identity as a Black girl from the South Side of Chicago who had cousins caught up in gun charges and drug charges and how that derailed their lives. Right. And so when you have more people in spaces that understand the context of community that can really have an impact on children's lives, not only in those situational moments, but in those system level experiences, that's what we're seeking to do. That's what we can do. That's what we will do if we're going to still be in these systems. But yeah, definitely there has been a direct effort to discredit public school spaces. And that has not stopped.
Yeah, no, it certainly hasn't stopped. What are your thoughts? Because there was an era, and it may still be ongoing, since I was in the classroom briefly, where you had white-led organizations, and I'll name, not to disparage them, but it's just something that happened. Organizations like Teach for America and places like that, and they send white students fresh out of school, white teachers, into our communities as well. And they're not always connected, don't always have perspective. But again, that existed because of the vacuum of too few of us. How many Black male teachers are there? I was one of the only ones in an inner city school in Washington, D.C. What impact have those types of programs had, positive or negative? One, and two, what are your thoughts or Surge's thoughts about the charter school movement and what impact that may have had on us trying to continue to realize the promise of Brown?
Yeah. So the first question around TFA and the ask was very interesting, is that I'm actually a TFA alum.
Yeah.
So
like
yeah,
me. I know. I was too.
Yeah. So I'm TFA and I remember being very much in the process, in the experience, as going through. I was the only Black person in 2005 to interview in the city of Nashville because I was at Fisk. And so I was the only person that interviewed that day. And so I know that like those type of organizations have been under a level of like critique that needs to like, how are you entering to the system, centering whiteness coming into our spaces? And I know from the work that they've done, that they've done some work around building a collective, engaging with their Black and Brown folks to help change and shift that narrative. But sometimes once harm is caused, it's so hard to come back from that. But they are, I know that they're diligently working towards that. And there are other organizations that are very similar that have come into communities that have centered whiteness, center themselves as like assimilating into white dominant culture and backtracking now because realizing their fault, right? This nothing new. Goes way back to carpetbagging back in the day. So it goes nothing new. So what do I feel about? I feel like those organizations who understand that they made critical mistakes, and if they are working to be critical of their own work and shifting that narrative and empowering the people of color within the organization and impacted by the organization, all power to you if your focus is to benefit our children.
Right.
Same thing with charters, because we had a lot of our folks who've transitioned into charter spaces. I know folks who have single site charters. My experience with charters actually came from the original space where they were created. There's a major charter that existed in my community, Betty Shabazz, right? Charter school. Like there was many charter schools started from the space of, I want my child to attend a school that reflects my ideology, my identity as a Black or Brown person. And a lot of African-centered charters are the ones that I remember starting with. Now, the way in which the charter space is currently, because they're so vast and how it is very much so almost a replica of the system, right? It almost looks almost exactly like the system. It's really not a versus circumstance. It's a together. We're all serving children. We're all serving Black and Brown children, no matter what system you're in, whether you're in the charter system or you're in the district system. If you are serving Black and Brown children, then we need to be on the same team. And that's really how, so in putting in the context of Surge. So when I did Surge, I was the only, in that year, I was the only district principal. And there were other charter networks and other spaces like that. And that now it's expanded beyond that now. So even with our Black Principals Network within Surge Institute, it gives charter and district principals time to sit together and be a part of the work together, because that is also a part of the plan to put us against one another.
Yeah.
But we're both working on behalf of Black and Brown children. So it's really now a space of, how do we collaborate to best serve the youth? How do we disband this myth, really, of us being on separate sides of the coin when we're serving the same children? And how do we move from that level of separation to synthesizing and solidifying with one another and being in solidarity? Like, that's what I think the next step is for that, is like, how do we create those solidarity spaces between charter and district? And I believe that can happen.
Is that coming together starting to happen?
Yeah, I see in our spaces it is, right? So I see and I can't speak for larger like district spaces, but within the Surge space, yes. So I look at some of my cohorts and I see leaders within the district landscape, and I see leaders that represent charter landscapes, how they create opportunities to collaborate, how they share resources across their school buildings, how they even have staff come together and have trainings together with one another. So within our communities, absolutely, I see that there are bridges being built between that. But I want to say these chasms that we're building bridges over are created to distract us from our overall goal, which is the betterment of the youth that we're serving.
No, that's important. Talk to us a little bit, if you would, about diversity at the educational leadership level. Mm-hmm. How that impacts students and how they're able to achieve.
Yeah, so we have, it's data that demonstrates that when you have even a principal of color or a teacher of color, how that enhances your ability to achieve. Not just for Black and Brown children, but also for white children. Like, having that person in the building gives you even more step ahead of saying, I can do this, right? It has positive effects on the social emotional space for Black and Brown children to have people in the building that look like them and understand their experiences. And it also has a positive effect on the building overall to ensure that there are multiple perspectives being seen. The issue sometimes we have there, and we have these diversity spaces, is, do those Black and Brown folks feel empowered to speak up? Are those Black and Brown folks empowered to lead or serve in the way that reflects their identity? Are they encouraged to say, because I'm a Black woman, I'm going to do this, and that's okay?
Yeah.
Because so many people want to be like, oh, it's the same for everybody. There is no such thing. And so that doesn't... No such thing. I have to be able to say, because I'm a Black woman, this is how, this is necessary for me. Because I'm a Black man, this is necessary for me. Because I am a Latino man, this is what's, because I am a queer woman, this is what's best for me. Because I, whatever that is that they are, their identity is, they need to be able to bring it to the table and feel empowered in that space. So yes, the data says that it benefits the children. It also benefits the staff as a collective when those folks are empowered to be themselves.
So where do we go from here? How do we try to get diversity in the classroom, diversity in administrative leadership positions? How do we get that restored? And also, how do we, what incentives can happen, whether they be at the district level or the school level or on our part in the movement?
Yeah.
We want more people. We want more of us to get back in this vocation, in one of our original vocations. Our young people need it. They need to see us. This is urgent. How do we get us back there?
Yeah. So our founder always talks about this idea of the takeover. Right. We really have to take these systems over, but not in the sense of, oh, we're going to drown out. But yeah, we got to be in those rooms. We got to be at that table. And so the work that we do is, how do we empower our folks to want to, not want to, because they want to be a part of the takeover. How do we empower them to feel that they can be a part of the takeover, that they can seek those roles? So that's the work that we want. Like, we need to be really clear about, here are the resources for access there, and take down the barriers to the access. And when we get into those roles, how do we eliminate barriers? How do we build bridges within communities? How do we coalition build with Black and brown folks? Because it can't just be Black and it just can't be brown. We got to do this together, because they like to separate us in that way too. There, when we get in this space that we are in these seats, and I'm not saying, oh, we just hire all Black folks. We can hire allies as well. That's because I know some people from they'll go real crazy with it. Like, y'all just want to take over all the systems and it just be all Black and brown folks. No, we need to make sure that it is representative of us, but not only representative of us, but we have the power to disrupt them when they do not serve us. And sometimes we do not have that power. We are put in those spaces, but we are restricted from the power to disrupt the system. And so now, what's, for many of us who keep getting access to these spaces, what Surge seeks to do is to surround you in the love and the beauty of your identity, of who you are, and treat that as a value add and not a distraction of. Give you the skills necessary so you can actually do that job and do it well, and provide you access to those things. So we try to eliminate these barriers by giving you access to executive coaching, giving you access to things that you don't, that many of us don't have when we're entering into these leadership roles, and then we leave because we burnt out, because we can't do it by ourselves anymore. So the only way that we're able to get in and take over is we got to stack these decks. We got to put these people in these roles and then empower them to make the pipelines very strong for the folks to follow behind them. So we have one of our fellows is currently a superintendent of Kansas City Public Schools, right? So like, we are moving into those spaces that we can really directly affect change. We have many folks that are on school boards across the nation, in Chicago and DC, who are Surge alum. We are moving into those roles, but once we're in them, it's not just about having them. I think there was a phase in time where it was just like, we in the role, we in the seat, we here.
Right.
We here, we made it. It's not about just making it to the seat anymore. I think what makes it inviting for folks is when they feel not that Black person, not that brown person is just in the seat, but they are like shining, creating a pathway for me. That they are empowering the next generation, that they are tearing down barriers that prevent the success and the brilliance of our community. So
lastly, you talked about us having power. And for those of you who are listeners as well, there's a role to play, because we see what other communities are doing in our school system, going to take over school board meetings, being heard, pushing their agenda, Moms for Liberty, we have to be in those rooms as well. Those of us who want the type of leadership that Serge and Andrea are talking about, that everything is like that. We just can't sit idly by. So if we want to see that reflected in the classroom and in the leadership in these schools, those of us who've got children, even if we don't have children, we all are part of the village. Even if we don't have children in the public system, we pay for it. That's one thing about us folks. We pay for stuff, folks, and we don't even see. Now, we'd like to go turn the waitress out at the restaurant where she doesn't provide the service we're paying for. But we have a right to do that when it comes to our school system so that it can ultimately realize the promise of Brown in terms of diversity.
Yeah.
That's an important part of this. Folks, Surge Institute is doing incredible work. We are not finished. A lot of times when our movement, something happens and we celebrate the anniversary, and we thought that was the end of it. But this is an ongoing struggle.
Yeah.
We commend Surge and what Andrea is doing. I think that one of the Supreme Court justices just said the other day that Brown has become obsolete. That's not really matter anymore. That's insane. We are still living under de facto segregation, and society has helped. Everything that is happening now in terms of what we're watching on the news, what people like the dudes running for president is doing, this confusion, this division is happening is because the Brown ruling is still incomplete. The goal was not to say we better off because we're the white school, but to bring everyone together in an environment where they can learn and do away even with the concept of division and segregation and race. To start there, it was a beautiful and idealistic idea. We can't give up on humanity. Dr. King wouldn't let us if he was still here. So that's what Surge is doing. That's what we're all doing. Surge Institute, folks, be sure to check them out. Andrea, give everyone your website, please.
Yes, we are Surge Institute. We are www.surgeinstitute.org. Please check us out. Come see our offerings if you're interested in any of our program. We are recruiting in Detroit and DC currently and in Chicago. So if you are looking for a community, you are a youth serving leader, go and visit those pages, learn more about our organization and apply. Come join our community. Our founder often says, and I'm glad you say this also, Reverend Marvin, thank you so much again for having me to be here to represent Surge, is that this is, and you said this earlier, this is a movement. It's not a moment. This is not a program, right? This is a movement of folks who are committed to the change that we want to see within education across this land. So if you want to join us, if you want to be a partner of our work, please come go visit our websites and apply to our fellowships.
Wonderful. Yeah, no, this is a great opportunity, folks. Please take advantage of it. Let's continue to do all the work that's necessary to realize the promise of Brown. These 70 years later, the executive director of Surge Institute has been our guest, Andrea Black Evans, and a Fiskite. So we're honored to have her. Good to meet someone who walked on the same path that I did. Andrea, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for getting woke and listening to Make It Plain. As always, perform an act of kindness on behalf of an elder or young person. Write a letter to a sister or brother who just so happens to find her or himself incarcerated. Offer libations to the ancestors upon whose sturdy shoulders we all now stand. And above all, give thanks to the God of your understanding by whatever name you call her and him. All God asks of us is that we give each other love. Thanks for giving MIP love. And please remember to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. If all hearts and minds are clear, it has been made plain.